And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute. And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Laz and Powers. I am Mark Lazarus, joined by Scott Powers. We're of The Athletic. And we are joined today, the day before the last game of the Blackhawks season, by Blackhawks general manager Kyle Davidson, who was nice enough to give us his time today to talk about the big picture, all the small pictures, all the prospects Scott wants to talk about, all the good stuff. Kyle, how are you?
I'm great. It's an exciting day for me and the Blackhawks organization here. A little bit of front office news when we're taping this. But yeah, in good spirits and happy to be here.
Well, let's talk about that. Today, the big announcement was Jeff Greenberg, the Cubs assistant general manager, is now the Blackhawks associate general manager. And I know we talked last month about, you know, kind of thinking outside the box and outside the traditional quote unquote hockey man persona for the front office. What does Jeff bring to the organization?
Yeah, well, I think first of all, he does share our vision for the future here. And while his past experience and some of his success came in a different sport, he is passionate about hockey and the Blackhawks. He brings really valuable perspective and you know, has great experience in a path what it takes to win the right way. You know, he brings some strategic, I guess I'll call it sophistication, to our hockey operations group. He's going to oversee a lot of the systems and the different processes that will, arm the entire group, not just maybe scouting, but scouting, development, coaching, and every other area, using, data tools and information, needed to make decisions, both big and small. So really excited.
How did this come about? Where it's unique, where he's obviously a finalist, and Danny and Jamie were interested in him, but for you to, I guess to choose someone that was, up for the job as well as you, where how did this stem from? Where did it kind of come in that you, you thought of him joining your staff, and what's been the process to interview him and then kind of come around the idea that, baseball, someone in baseball could, do this in hockey?
Yeah, well, from the start, my intention was to bring some outside influence to the staff. And at the inception, I didn't necessarily know what form that would take. But right after I got the job, Jeff reached out just congratulating me, and we just kind of stayed in touch for a little bit and eventually got on the phone and started talking he was down at spring training with the Cubs in Arizona, and just, you know, started talking about just not really the jobs or anything in particular, but talk about hockey and our paths. And we were so aligned on so many things that after our first conversation, I just started thinking, like, you know what? This guy's pretty interesting. He's really smart. He's got some great experience, and that type of profile and his skill set is something we need. I need around me. And the fact that he had worked in baseball and seen the build from the ground up on some of these systems and the construction of some of the processes that they've put in place over with the Cubs, it's the exact type of profile I wanted to add. And then just, you know, as we developed that relationship, I got really, really comfortable with him as a person, because in the end, you know, we're going to spend a lot of time together. And so you have to be very comfortable with the person, you know, personally and professionally. And I think he really, really fit the profile that I wanted to bring in from a skill set and a competency standpoint. But then once I got to know him, and then we brought, you know, Norm McIver and Brian Campbell in to kind of get to know him as well. And we all, you know, really, really clicked right away. And it was a great fit right from the start. So it was very organic in how it came about. And I, you know, he was kind of my number one target, I think you could say, right from our first conversation. I'm so excited that it worked out the way it did.
You said he brings some organizational sophistication, I think is how you just put it. Mm-hmm. What's unsophisticated about the way that the Blackhawks do business, or just in general? I feel like hockey is always a little behind the times with other pro sports. What specifically is unsophisticated?
Yeah, I don't mean to downplay or denigrate what the Blackhawks do or what the hockey industry has. It's more so that baseball is just ahead of hockey in many respects, especially their use of information and how it's integrated throughout the whole operation in, you know, in his case, at the Cubs, the baseball operation. And then we want to bring that and learn from his experience and how baseball does things. You know, they've really found a way of measuring things that hockey has not, you know, and how that crosses over and transfers. We're going to do, you know, there's going to be a lot of trial and error and research and development in that process, but the way of doing things and the structure of how you integrate information and you utilize information, how you store and access it, it's all very transferable across any sport. And to have someone that's seen that build, been through it before, seen what works, what doesn't, what sequence it should go in, it's going to save us a lot of time, but we're also just getting someone that knows how to do it and sees the value in it like I do. And so there's that really aligned vision and in building out the team around myself. He was the perfect complement to bring that outside influence, and really, you know, bring I'll use it again, the sophistication that baseball has in some of these processes that they employ to hockey and to the Blackhawks.
So you got the job that he wanted. Is he just coming here to sabotage you to get the job 2 years from now? How is this going to work? Going to go to your shoulder at all?
I have a little more confidence in myself that he'll be taken over in 2 years. But no, but you know what? My philosophy is I want the best people around me. And to have someone, personally, I think I've got, with Norm and now with Jeff, I've got two people that I think could be GMs. And mm-hmm. So I want to surround myself with the best people for our group to make the best decisions possible, and have people at that level and of that caliber and of that varied skill set. I couldn't think of a better group to have. You know, obviously Jeff went far in the process here because, you know, Danny and Jamie and the group that ran the GM search saw great potential and upside and value in what Jeff brought to the table. And I saw that as well. And so it wasn't something that when we met, I disagreed with. I agreed wholeheartedly, and I understand why he went as far as he did in the GM process. And so I just want the best people, and I think he's the best person for the job, and that's what I want around me. And so that's, I'm really glad to be able to execute on that.
Not to give up any Cubs or now Blackhawks secrets, but is there any real life example you can kind of see where this applies to a different way of thinking of metrics or applying them to hockey where it works in baseball?
I think that just their general use of technology is just so far advanced. Their use of video analysis, of biomechanics, biometrics, and just how their sport is measured. And let's be honest too, baseball is a sport that's much more easily measured and evaluated through the use of data and information. But just the familiarity with that technology and with those information systems, we're going to find out, and we're going to really test this thing where we can derive predictive information out of the information that we receive in hockey. And that's the goal is it's not going to be some magic bullet that we find. It's going to be over time. We're going to be producing and hopefully finding information that makes us or helps us make better decisions. And Jeff's been through the life cycle of that in baseball. And we think that experience is really going to be able to transfer to hockey out as we go through a similar process in trying to find that predictive information to help us make great decisions for the hockey team.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
All right, well, let's transition to the ice here. And obviously the focus is on younger players going forward. This is a rebuild. You stated it could take a little while here. But we need to talk about Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane first, the older guys. The focus is on them. It's going to continue to be on them. They're both eligible for contract extensions July 13th. What do you see their role here for the future? And do you see a role here in the future for them?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is that, we've had some very, very general high level conversations with those players. And I think we're going to get into more specifics as we move forward. I don't think it's what we're doing and their role in it and how they see their role in it it's a very complex thing. And so this is going to be a series of detailed conversations that are going to occur. I think, the first of which will likely be at the exit interviews. And then we're going to see how that fits. We're going to be very transparent, and I'm going to be very transparent with them about our plan and the methods by which we're going to attack this thing. And then it'll be up to them to respond to that information accordingly and decide how we want to move forward and what the best role is for them. So I think it's very much in its infancy still, determining where we're at and how they see themselves playing a role in that. It remains to be seen, but we're going to keep that dialogue very open, very honest, and answer any questions that they may have in terms of what we're doing and where we're headed. So,
but we're still waiting to hear if they want to be a part of it. Do you want them to be a part of it? I guess that's the other question here that we haven't really got to.
Well, yeah, I think there's great value in having them part of it. I think it's the main part of that is informing them how we see their role, as part of that and what they can do to help us in this transition and in this phase of the organization's trajectory. So we have to have that conversation with them, how we believe they could assist and how we believe they could be part of it. And then it's up to them to determine if that's, you know, amenable, or they're amenable to that. And if they're part of that, or if they want to try something new, like that's all up to them. But that's part of the ongoing conversation that's going to occur as we get into the off season and into the summer as well.
Something that we heard, I think, throughout this week from, you know, especially Kane and Taze, was the idea that they're hopeful the rebuilds, you know, it ends pretty quickly, you know, and mm-hmm. and you get that as a player, why they're coming at that way. And certainly maybe how it was done before, it was more of a retooling, you know, this thought that, you know, something could be longer. How, you know, I know they bring up the Kings and but even you look at the Kings, I mean, they had three pretty dismal years before they got things back on track. What do you feel like is a realistic timeline? I mean, objectively, this feels like it could take a little bit for you to replenish the pipeline, and you know, things may have to get worse before they get better. And then on top of that, how do you, I know you've been preaching patience to fans. How do you preach patience to veterans? And I guess especially Kane and Taves, who have won and probably see their window of winning, you know, coming to an end, and, you know, like don't want to fully comprehend what a rebuild might look like.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, and I understand the interest in a timeline, but we're right at the start with this thing. We're right at the beginning, and you know, I haven't had this job full time for very long. It's been a pretty, you know, quick, you know, we're already talking about fast tracking the rebuild. Yeah. I think I've been in the job for about 6 weeks now, and so you know. My intention is to do this the right way and to build it to the point where we can be successful and we can sustain that, because I'm not interested in just rushing back to hopefully have a chance at the playoffs and then we fall off again. You know, we want to do better than that. And that likely takes time. And, you know, I like you said, I understand why players would want to get there quicker, because they want to win. I do too. I want to win as well. I'm looking at it big picture and trying to sustain things though. And so my timeline might be a bit longer than theirs. What that timeline is, I think, remains to be seen. We have to see how the offseason goes, how the draft goes. We've got the lottery on the 10th. That's a big point for us in May. And so we'll see how that goes. So, you know, timeline is something that's very in flux and really depends on, you know, the players we bring in and their development and developing them the right way. You know, selling veteran players on that, I don't think I'm looking to sell them on it. I'm going to tell them what we're looking to do and why we're looking to do it, and give them the information that I'm dealing with and my thought process. And then it's up to players to determine if they want to be part of that and if they want to play a role in that. And so I'm not looking to sell them on it. I just want them to have all the information available to make the best decision for themselves. If that's in Chicago, awesome. If that's, you know, elsewhere, then you know what, that's a bridge we'll have to cross. But it's the timeline doesn't change, you know, based on you know, discussions with players. I think we just have to do things the right way. We have to follow the right process on our end to get back to being a quality team and sustaining that quality over time, and not rushing back just to say, you know, this isn't a race to the middle. We're trying to get back to the top and stay there. So that's the end goal.
I think any rebuild is going to need some veterans to kind of, you know, usher the players in, teach them to be professionals, all that. But you got a lot of these guys. You got, you know, on the defense, you've got Seth Jones and Jake McCabe and Connor Murphy. You've got Tyler Johnson up front. You've got Kane and Taze potentially. You've got DeBrincat. Are there too many veterans on this team? What in your mind is a good structure for rebuild? How many veterans, like, what's the ratio of old guy to young guy? How many young guys do you want in the lineup on a given night? Like, how do you measure that?
Yeah. You know, I think that's an interesting question. I really believe that's, a lot of that is determined, in my opinion, by the push that the young players put to make the NHL and stick in the NHL. And so if, you know, where we are in our trajectory, we're going to do what's right to put the young players in the position to succeed. And if that's leaving them in Rockford, then we need players, first of all, to fill roster spots. And we're not just going to force feed and put young players in there because we're rebuilding. So we have to play young players. You know, a rebuild doesn't necessarily have to happen with the players that are going to play a major role down the road. They don't have to play at the United Center next year to start, right? That doesn't have to occur on the United Center ice for all these players. So you need players, good influences in the locker room for when they do come in. So I don't necessarily think you can have too many veterans. It's more so, you know, there's a conversation to be had and it's a good problem. If there's so many young players pushing to the NHL that require NHL spots and they're being blocked, that's when the question comes, do we need to, you know, clear some room for them? But we're a ways away from that. And, you know, we need to take our time with the prospects to develop them the right way. And if we've got too many good veterans around in a rebuild, that's not a bad problem to have. And we do have some really good veterans here that are great examples on what it takes to succeed at the NHL level, to prepare as a professional and to set the example for some of these young players when they are ready. And so we'll cross that bridge when we get there with the quote unquote problem of having too many young players ready for the NHL, but we're not quite there yet. So
the sense I get is Kane is looking for a reason to stay. He doesn't, you know, he's a Blackhawk. He's always been a Blackhawk. He's talked at length about he wants Dylan Strome back because he likes playing with him. He talked this week about, you know, if I'm playing with Alex DeBrincat, that's a reason for me to want to be here because right. I like playing with him and I get, you know, and it works. Like, does that factor in? I mean, do you know, Patrick Kane is still an all-world player. I mean, he's going to be an all-world player for years to come. The way he plays, he's not going to drop off the way some veterans do. Is that a priority? Not catering to Kane, but making Kane want to be here just because of his stature. He sells tickets, which matters in a rebuild. Like all these factors. I mean, do you have to placate Patrick Kane, for lack of a better term?
You know what? I think in the end, we have to do what's right for the Chicago Blackhawks long term. And, you know, I think we always want to be respectful and be mindful of the players we've had, especially players that have done so much for the organization and the city, like a player like Patrick Kane has. But we also have to be mindful of the future of the team and how we want that to look. And we can't just keep everybody around just to say we kept them around, because in the end we finish where we finished with, you know, this team, and we have to make changes. We have to change some of what's going on and add, you know, to our prospect pool and figure out how we get back to that next level. And so, you know, everything's on the table, everything's under consideration. And I think we have to look at the future of the Blackhawks and not out of any disrespect to Patrick or Jonathan or who they may want here or not want here or what have you. We just have to do what we think is right from an asset management standpoint moving forward. And that's going to be the focus. Again, not that we aren't taking, you know, these players, these all world, you know, future Hall of Fame players' opinions into consideration, because it all goes into the mix, but we also have to balance that with what's best, in the long-term future of the organization.
Are you looking at guys that, I guess, a DeBrincat, like, do you see him as someone that on the other side of a rebuild, like, you need some players who are here during it, or, you know, guys at a certain age that are, you know, like, can you project out that far to say, you know, this guy, you know, he's good enough to be here in 5 years or however long it takes?
I think you always are looking to the future and, the thing about, you know, let's not kid ourselves. Alex is one of the premier goal scorers in the NHL. He's very young. If we look out in 5 years, yeah, of course, he's going to be a great player still. And so we have to map that out, both from a roster standpoint, a talent standpoint, and a salary cap standpoint. And so there's lots of considerations that go into that. But there's nothing wrong with continuity through the life cycle of a rebuild. You know, I think every case is different. You know, you have to evaluate each player based on where you see them projected in your lineup, their value internally versus externally, and then kind of make decisions from there. But I'm not of the belief that because you're doing a rebuild, everyone has to go and everyone has to be new. I think that's not valuing and evaluating your current players properly. I think every player is different, but just because you're embarking on a rebuild doesn't mean you have to, every single name has to be new in 5 years. That's not necessarily the case. It's just kind of, you know, you have to make decisions player by player and see what the long-term short-term value is of maintaining them.
From a salary cap standpoint, obviously you'd probably like to come in with a clean slate, but you have Seth Jones' contract at 9.5. DeBrincat's maybe going to cost you that. What challenges does that bring, I guess, knowing that you already have two guys that you're probably a little bit maxed out on, and you have Cannon Tate's contract for another year, but and kind of their next contracts are up. Like, what's the challenge of that during a rebuild, or is that even a challenge where knowing that maybe you're not adding on other, you know, UFAs or acquiring guys with or looking to acquire players with large cap hits?
Yeah. Look, the salary cap is the great equalizer in our sport. It's a major factor. Cap space is one of the most valuable assets you can have in the NHL these days. I think over half of the NHL ended in LTI, you know, over the last year. And so it just shows you how pinched everyone is. And so with having some flexibility moving forward in the next few years, I think we have to be mindful of that and we have to try and maintain that. So that's a major consideration. Hopefully we bring in some young players that we have to budget some major funds for, because that means we're bringing in some pretty high end talent. And so we have to be flexible and agile in our budgeting and very discerning with how we spend our salary cap dollars. You don't want to start that process too late, because it can get away from you pretty quickly. It's, cap space goes away real quick. And so, you know, it's a major consideration. Without the money, you can't afford the talent. And so we want to acquire the talent, but we also want to keep the talent. And we want to keep them here as long as possible once we do get that young talent. So it's a major consideration, and it's something we're always gaming out and projecting and looking at and evaluating the costs and benefits of certain contract decisions. But it's always a constant evolving discussion in terms of the cap. But I think for the next little while, flexibility is a major priority for us.
Are you tired of the word rebuild, and do you wish you never said it in the first place? Because it's like we have to put it in every sentence and every headline and every story and every question of every player, and it kind of colors everything you're doing, right? Like it's what does this mean in the context of the rebuild? And you know, I know, right, you wanted transparency, but do you already regret that?
No, I because it is what it is. Like I don't want to color it or put a different name or you know, because that's what it is. It is a rebuild, and I think rebuild is thrown around a lot when someone new goes into a situation or you know, a team looks like it's time to hit the reset button, but it is what it is, and I'm totally fine with that. I'm comfortable with it. I wouldn't have thrown it out there at the introductory press conference if I didn't want you guys throwing it around all over the place. So it is what it is, and that's what we're doing, and so it's okay to call it what it is. So I'm good with it.
So the context of a rebuild, obviously, it usually coincides with the word tanking. And I know that players right. don't tank, and, you know, but teams often put themselves in a position not to win because it's better mm-hmm. in the long run.
Right.
If you win the draft lottery next, was it May 10th, and yep. you don't have a first round pick next year, if you're not in that Connor Bedard sweepstakes, does it change the way you look at next season and even this offseason?
I don't think so. I really don't. You know, I think we're going to have to evaluate what comes our way this summer, regardless if we have a first round pick in 2023 or not. You know, I wouldn't, I wouldn't say we're going to avoid anything because we don't have a 2023 first round pick. If it does help us down the road, I don't think that's something I'll do. Honestly, I think we'll probably do exactly the same things this summer, or explore the same things this summer. If we win the draft lottery, we don't win the draft lottery. It's almost just, that's for the strategy in the amateur scouting department to alter their operations. But from a management standpoint and what I'd like to do, or what we'd like to execute based on what comes our way this summer, it's not going to change anything.
But beyond your specific job and what you're trying to do, losing is a much tougher sell if you don't have kind of a pot of gold at the end of that rainbow. I mean, can you imagine if this team is, as bad as a lot of people are expecting it to be next year, and there's no promise of a top pick next year? That's a tough sell.
Oh, I totally understand that. Yeah. I think, not to be blunt about it, but
please be blunt.
We are where we are in the standings right now with potentially no first round pick. And so it's tough. It's exhausting. It's no fun for me. As much as we are in a rebuild, I don't like losing. I hate losing. I want the Blackhawks to win. And so I'm trying to still have to wrap my head around the whole thing every time I leave. And see, you leave the United Center, you don't win. It's just, okay, this is part of the process. Unfortunately, this is where we are. This is why we're embarking on what we're embarking on. And we're going to make the decisions to get back to where we want to be and find that success that we all crave. We all remember those times, of leaving the United Center, in a comeback or a Stanley Cup, and how great that feels. And it's winning is a drug, and you want to get back there, and you want that feeling in the arena, around the office, around the locker room. We all want it, and that's the mission. Unfortunately, we are where we are, and we're just not up in the standings. So we need to make some hard decisions that may not, aid in winning in the short term, but we believe might help us get back to where we want to be quicker and stay at that level longer. So that's the intent. That's what I always come back to for myself, because no one's trying to lose. Definitely not. It's just kind of that's the symptom of where we at in our rebuild and in our trajectory.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
With the coaching decision, what do you expect the process to be for you after the season?
Yeah, I think we're gonna do some other work right after the season ends. We've got some amateur meetings. We'll get to the draft lottery, but all the while we're gonna be building the profile of what we want and what we'd like to find in our next full-time head coach and coaching staff as well. So that's going to be the immediate mission is to build that profile and really set those expectations and standards of what we want to find in the next head coach. And then it's going to be, let's build a candidate list based on this profile that we've created. And even before we build that specific profile, we know that Derek's going to be one of those people. Derek's going to be one of those people on the candidate list. So it's going to be a process that'll probably extend into the summer. I don't want to put a timeline on it, but I think over the next 2 months or so, we're really going to drill down on specifics of traits and characteristics and expectations, and then build our candidate list off of that, and then obviously conduct interviews and in the hopes of finding the next head coach for the Blackhawks.
How would you assess how Derek's done so far?
I think Derek's done really well. I'm really happy. It's a tough spot to come into, given the start, given everything that was going on around the team, myself being interim for a while, that's not easy. I think the players responded really well to him, his personality. I think he was the right person at the right time for us. He really lightened things up, made coming to work fun, for the players. I call it work, but coming to the locker room fun, and it was fun for me too to be around Derek and to get his perspective on things and just to have that levity. I know it's not going to be a core, having a good personality is great, and having a good sense of humor is awesome. It's not going to be part of the job description for the next coach, but it really does help, especially the situation he came into. And so that was great. But on the ice, what I see is players are battling. They're still fighting. Like, that game against Vegas, our team had every reason to not show up, but they found the motivation, and that's through, that's through Derek and really getting these guys up for a game that, for all intents and purposes, doesn't mean a whole lot in the grand scheme of things to them as players. They've got one eye on the off season, but he's kept them on task and working hard, and we've pulled out a good result last game, and that's based on the effort and based on the push that Derek's put into the room. So I've been really happy with Derek, and if I wasn't pleased with what he did, we wouldn't string him along and make him a candidate in the head coaching search just because. So he's earned to be a candidate for the job full time.
You have to tailor the hire to the situation. Like Joel Quenneville would not have been a good head coach for the Blackhawks in the mid 2000s. Dennis Savard was perfect because he kind of let the young guys run free and there wasn't as much pressure. But then once it was time to win, he was out the door, and in comes Joel Quenneville to get him over the hump. Do you have to tailor the coach? Are you looking for a caretaker, a developer, or are you looking for someone that, a proven winner already who might want to be to try to step into this? I mean, do you have to tailor it to the situation?
I think to an extent you have to tailor it to the situation, but we're also not. The thing that I've been commented to me is, you're looking for the next ex head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks. Like, no, we're not looking to, like, okay, this person comes in for 3 years and then we get rid of.
Right.
No, we're looking for someone to come in and grow this team and take them to the next level. We're looking for a long-term solution here, but they have to fulfill a certain element of criteria that we're looking to fill. We haven't fully developed that yet, but I think some of the things that are really important are, communication, I think, is huge nowadays, especially with players and delivering your message. And I think a good understanding of where we're at as well and what we're trying to achieve is very important. Also, interested to hear their takes on style of play and how that might mesh with some of the things that we're thinking and considering and wanting to potentially employ moving forward. So I think there's a number of things, but we're not looking for a caretaker. I think that would be a disservice to the players and to the long-term vision. We're looking for someone to come in and really grow with our team and our organization and push this thing forward. As far as the profile on the coach, super open to that. Very open to where that person might come from, what type of experience that person might have. You know, those are all things that we'll really drill down on when we actually interview candidates. You know, I think we're gonna leave it very open ended and try and learn a lot as well on what could work that maybe something will surprise us. Maybe nothing will surprise us, but we have to get in the room with these people and talk to them and hear different perspective, different thought, different ideas, and then go from there.
You made two pretty significant changes within the pro and amateur scouting with Ryan Stewart and Mark Kelly departing. Mm-hmm. What was behind those moves, and do you have a different vision for those scouting departments going forward?
I think it's just time for a new voice. In both staffs. I think in Mike Donaghy, we brought in someone that's paid his dues, that deserved a shot to be running his own draft, and so really excited about that. And then just in general in scouting, we wanted to change some philosophy and change some of the things we were looking for in players and the players we wanted to bring into the organization, and felt that was best delivered through new channels and new voices. And so that was the thought process behind that. And I think with some of the new things that we've pushed out to the scouts and things we want them to look for, the response has been great. I think we're really on a good track of understanding what we want moving forward from a Blackhawks player that we bring in. So it's been really good. It's a positive change and just good new messaging processes that are going on.
Is there anything specific you're looking at a different player? Like what is just, I guess from a scouting standpoint, just traits or characteristics physically, mentally, or?
Yeah. I think in general, we want players with high compete, high character. And then the other thing is speed. We really want to enhance the speed element of our team, especially up front and even more specifically down the middle of the ice. We want to bring in speed element, and really increase the tempo that the team plays at in the future. So those are just some very general things, but high compete and speed. That's what we're kind of new emphasis the scouts is on.
Okay, I need to preface this by pointing out that, as I do every time, that Kirby Dach is just 21 years old, and he's a pretty good player already at 21 years old. But there's a bunch of 21-year-olds out there kind of wrecking the curve. Do you have any concerns about where he is and what his ceiling might be after the last couple of years?
No, I don't have concerns about his ceiling. I think it's been a disappointing year for Kirby. I think he's outlined that he's had some a little bit of a tough one in terms of production. I'm sure he wanted to put up some more points and have a bit bigger of an impact. But look, I think we talked about it in before the Tampa game, was that if you're looking at another team and Kirby Dach's on another team or he's in the league, like those are traits you're going to throw in with. He's big, he's athletic, he's skilled, he's talented, and he's still very young, as you said. So those are traits that you want to throw in with. And as much as he, I'm sure, would like to have produced more, and yeah, of course, everyone, would we want him to put up 70 points? Like, yeah, but like, you know what? Not everyone's development is linear, and not everyone's development is the same, especially for players that are have those bigger frames and bigger bodies. Sometimes it takes a little longer for them to adapt into the NHL and get settled and realize, the physical element that they can bring to the game and how to impose that at the NHL level. It's not an easy thing. It's not an easy transition to move, especially, for any player from junior to the NHL right away and then develop under the circumstances that you're trying to live up to whatever he might want to try and live up to. That's not easy. And so we recognize that. And we still hold a lot of promise for Kirby because he does have the talent. He does have the physical skill set that that we covet. And so, you know, I'm not down on Kirby. You know, he's still in great stead with us, and he's got a lot of upside. We all see it. And, you know, I think this summer's a good chance. Like Derek's mentioned in the media, little reset, you know, have a great summer, come back refreshed and show everyone what he can do. So we're excited for that.
It really just underscores how critical when you have a top three, top five pick like that. I mean, you go back to the last time the Blackhawks were in this situation, they got Kane and Taves, and that made a huge difference going forward. Like you don't want to have these opportunities very often, but you got one or two here. It just kind of how much pressure it is to make a pick like that. If whether you get it this year or next year, if you have a high pick like that, I mean, the pressure to get it right is immense, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. We, you know, being where we're at and, you know, going into whether it's 2022 draft or 2023 draft and we've got a high pick, you want to cash in on that. There is no doubt about it. It's high stakes because that player is going to be, you know, should be a cornerstone of your team down the road. And so you want to make that happen. You want to deliver on that high valued asset, you know, from a draft pick perspective. And so, you know, I don't necessarily think it's high pressure. It's just, you need to do it. You need to cash in and you need to find the value when you're put into those situations, because, you know, not only do they have restrictions on the number of lotteries you can win in a certain time frame, but you also don't want to be down to the bottom of the standings over and over and over and over again. You know, you're down there, you're going to get a good player as a result, but then you want to use those players you've drafted at that draft point to start ascending. And so it's very important as far as pressure on that. I feel, I don't necessarily feel that pressure, but it is a duty to get it right.
How do you, you know, with when guys are in Rockford, I have a better understanding of developmentally how you work with them, with Mark Edenworkins, Mark's with them or Anders or whomever, and the NHL and in the past, it seems like it's been a challenge to develop players at that level. You know, I know you have Ryan Kane and some guys that work like that, but once they get to the NHL, like the focus becomes on more of the day to day and, you know, working with a team framework. For a guy like, you know, like Kirby Dach or Kurashev, you guys have obviously promoted a number of players and Twistle and down the line. How do you continue to work with them developmentally? And, you know, how can the Blackhawks maybe help, you know, Kirby get to where you guys want him, you know, from that perspective?
Yeah, no, I think for any player that comes to the NHL, I don't think development ever ends. A lot of times development is synonymous with amateur or pre-NHL. I don't see that as the case. I think while I don't think the NHL is a development league, I think players can always improve at the NHL level. You know, we have to do a better job at providing them the tools to improve. And that's definitely something we intend on doing, whether it be through information, additional technology, resources through coaching. You know, we're going to grow that area. That's something that I really want to enhance. And I think that's actually an area that Jeff Greenberg is going to be able to provide some good insight into, because the way they provide information to their players, you know, either through informational deliverables or technology, is so much more enhanced in a sport like baseball. And in some of my early conversations with him, there's some new, you know, there's some things we can do that are transferable, and some information that we can provide to our players to help them grow their games, to see where they can improve. You know, all you want is incremental gains, especially during the season. It's so hard to make monumental changes to a player to like really hyper enhance their development or their improvement, but there's little gains you can make along the way, and I think technology and information to the players is how you best do that, and baseball is really good at that. So I think Jeff's going to be a great influence in bringing that to the Blackhawks.
You've been very generous with your time. I one more thing I wanted to ask you, because I mean, you're 33, is that what it is?
That's right.
And you got your dream job here. What sucks the most about your job? What has surprised you that you just hate about this job?
I thought you were going to ask about Max Zerlounoff.
That's for the post credit scene. There's got to be some aspect of it that's just miserable.
You know what? Not really. Like, I know it's probably like you think it's probably BS, but it's all been great. I think the people I get to work with on a day-to-day basis, both in hockey and business, like getting to work with our hand in hand with our scouts, with our development, with you know, soon to be with Jeff, and just learning from all them, learning from Jamie Faulkner and Danny Wirtz. That's so exciting. And it's been great for me. Yeah, there's not really much downside. Like,
what kind of hours are you working?
Okay, maybe that sucks. No, like it's all good. It's long hours, but like that's sports. That's hockey. And so yeah. I love it. I couldn't ask for a better situation, a better support system internally. It's been fantastic early on, and so I'm just excited to keep working, and you know, the early work that we've done has been really exciting, and just makes me really, really optimistic for the future. And you know, now that we're really starting to assemble this team off the ice, I think it's really gonna do us wonders and put us in a good spot moving forward. So no real downside. You know, check in a couple of years. We can reassess that answer. But right now I'm, like you said, I'm 33. I got the energy. I can handle the long hours.
So. I was going to ask you which GM you dread hearing from the most, but I knew you wouldn't answer that one.
No, all good.
Sounds good. No, Kyle, appreciate you doing this.
Thanks, guys.
All right. That was Blackhawks general manager Kyle Davidson. Scott, what's your big takeaway from all that?
Yeah, I felt like we got some more details, and I think that was my objective in this was hearing more about the scouting and the you know, the plan, and you know, he was a little bit vague on the Caden Taves thing and or even the coaching, but it sounds like some of this is still on the fly. You know, like he mentioned, he's only been in the job for so long, and I think you know, there's a one for a lot of immediate answers, and he's being truthful that it's they're still figuring some of these out. But I thought it was interesting, just, you know, some of the scouting changes and how you know, how they see even Jeff, you know, Greenberg kind of being implemented into this. But yeah, I feel like he, you know, got into some more of the details, and some of that's probably just come with time too, since we've last talked to him. But that was interesting to me. For you?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've been obsessed with the Kane and Taves angle for almost a year now, because I think that's just the most compelling part of all of this. And he really left the door open for both those guys to be gone, didn't he? I mean, he didn't come out and say it, and he certainly said he would welcome them back in the right situation, but he is really opening the door for, if they don't want to be here, we don't want them here. We don't need them here. And even if they do want to be here, it's distinctly possible that they might not be in the plans. And, you know, he said all diplomatically, and he gave all the respect those players are due, but there's certainly, the word untouchable is certainly not going to be leaving his lips anytime soon. It's going to be fascinating at the draft. It'll be fascinating in mid-July, and it'll be fascinating when the season starts, if and when both guys are still here. It's going to be an interesting process to see how that all plays out.
I think it's interesting that, I guess, continue use the word interesting, but to the fact that he's not, other than saying that we're going to rebuild it, like there's no committing. And that's probably something he may have learned early in the process, or even from Stan Bowen, that I don't think you want to put, you know, like, you don't want to say like, this guy's untouchable, or this is, you know, this is how this situation is.
You don't want to paint yourself into a corner. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's how they got to where they are. Right. Like it became that players are untouchable, or that you became that you want to appease Kane and Taves, or, you know, like you wanted to promote the guys who were first rounders. And that's ultimately how this situation, you know, that they're in came about, is that there were too much waffling, and then also too many commitments, the feeling that they need to win now. And yeah, this may suck. And I, you know, I guess the other point that I thought, and I'm not sure he was exactly telling the truth of how they, if whether they win the lottery, like that changes things. Cause I think it does change things slightly. I think that,
yeah.
I don't think they want to walk, you know, Aaron Portsline and I wrote about today, but I don't think they want to walk Columbus to a generational talent potentially. Or I do think what happens at this draft, cause it changes a little bit too, of just not having a first round pick. I, you know, like it does change things too. So I think that stood out to me. But overall, yeah, it was I appreciate his honesty, and he's as open as he's being with us. And
yeah, he's being smart about it. He's in full command of the situation here, but he's not, you know, locking him in anything, and he's not you know, he's not really BSing too much. I mean, there's always going to be some corporate speak in there and some, you know, dodging, but he's pretty straightforward about it. He fully understands the gravity of the situation, the immense mountain in front of him, and the work that's going to be needing to get over that. And, you know, like you said, he's like, we're not trying to get back to the middle. We're trying to get back to the top. I think if you're a Blackhawks fan after 5 years of trying to get back to the middle, I think that's what you want to hear. Is this isn't a team that's just going to be trying to squeak in and be the Dallas Stars and get the 8 seed every year. They're trying to get back to where they were. And that's going to be a miserable, awful, terrible process. But, you know, Kyle Davidson seems like a guy he's all in on that process.
Yeah, and that they have to be. Right now it's not even, you know, the 10th seed. It's the being the 25th team, and that's what they've been as of late. And this was, you know, I know there were things that went against the Blackhawks this year, but Stan Bowman went for it all this year in a lot of ways, especially the Seth Jones trade, and they fell very, very far short. And they were probably going to come back with largely the same team again next season. And I think change is necessary. And I know that we didn't get into Holmstrom and Kubalik. We've asked them before, but I think that's the bigger picture for him.
They're gone. I think it's pretty clear they're gone.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think the bigger picture is that it's we can't run back the same team because these are the results that we've continued to, you know, like even bringing back Kane and Taves, like it has to be within his terms, you know, within the salary cap. It has to be within development. Like he can't hand them both $10 million contracts. Like, I mean, as he kind of got into about the cap space, like they want the flexibility. They're not going to go into 2 seasons from now paying DeBrincat, Jones, Kane, and Taves $40+ million. Like it eliminates all that flexibility. So I think too that he understands that he has to keep himself open to all those possibilities, because you don't want to restrict yourself during this rebuild. Cause that's how you end up where you're at again too. So it was all good. Right, well, obviously something we've been hoping to do for a little bit, and appreciate Kyle giving us all that time. And
yeah, everyone can yell at us for the questions we didn't ask in the comments or on Twitter, sure, and criticize our interviewing. But, you know, all in all, he was pretty good. Until next time, I don't know what the hell we're going to talk about next time. I am Mark Lazarus. That's Scott Powers. This is Laz and Powers. Bye.
Bye.
And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit.